Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody, and welcome to Mini Crush with Chuck and Noel.
Sorry, Chuck, I was just drinking my
latte.
Did you
just slurp on the goddamn mic?
I didn't slurp on the mic. I was off mic. That was an off mic slurp, and I was referencing the fact that our new coffee machine doesn't make lattes anymore, and that's upsetting.
It's upsetting to me. Did you drink lattes?
I like a latte. The thing about the old machine, though, is it used like this powdered milk stuff, so they always tasted a little funny.
Is that what that was? Of course they did.
Yeah.
There wasn't a real milk in
there. If you opened it up, there was like a big column of like weird white powder.
Ow.
Sorry, did I demystify the latte, your latte experience?
I certainly didn't think there was a tiny cow in there.
That would have been nice.
That would be great.
The cow would have to be in another room with the tubes kind of going off and winding through the ceiling, and then there's this cow room.
Tiny cow. You know, one of my new cats... I don't know if I can call them new anymore, but I guess they're new.
Yeah, they're newish.
Call him a cow kitty or the Holstein.
Oh.
Because he's, black and white, Holstein spotted.
Holstein, is that a breed of cattle?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Holstein cow? Yeah, man. Those are the best.
Are they milk cows? Beef cows? What kind of flavor of cow are they?
You know what? What is a Holstein? I want to say a Holstein is a dairy cow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Holsteins, beautiful. Look at those babies.
Oh yeah, of course. It's a classic cow.
Classic cow,
like the cow from the cover of the Pink Floyd record,
or the cow from the Hate Chicken restaurant.
I don't know that.
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. Eat more chicken.
Yeah.
Hate Chicken. That'd be funny. That would be an escalation.
That's what my cat looks like.
I love that.
So,
what's your cat's name?
Well, I have Luna and Levon.
Which one's the Holstein?
Levon is the Holstein.
Got it.
Luna is black.
Mm-hmm.
Although she has a little white on her belly.
Got it.
And they are siblings, and they are very, very sweet.
That's
and
wonderful.
Crazy. I've never had crazy cats like this.
I've been dating a lovely lady for a while now, and she has chihuahuas. And I used to think they were creepy and skittery and annoying,
uh-huh.
But hers are lovely. They're so snuggly and sweet. They're like little cat dogs.
Chihuahuas are easy to snark at until you meet a really good chihuahua.
Yeah.
My brother has a great chihuahua named Wallace, and this dog is great.
This one is Layla, and dog mom goes all out, like dresses him up in little costumes and little bows on. It's just, it's a whole
one
thing.
Man.
It's,
okay.
Oh, you know, and I can see, I see what you're doing there, Chuck.
I'm not doing anything.
I see what
I'm
you're doing there. I see what you're doing there, Chuck.
If you want to dress up your little purse dogs, that's great.
I think it's adorable.
That's wonderful.
It may just be that I'm kind of smitten for this woman, so she can do no wrong in my eyes. So
that's true. One day you may hate those dogs, Noel.
It's possible. Apparently they don't age well. They get real snaggle-toothed and drooly when they get older.
Yeah, Wallace is getting up there, and he's got an eye situation, sort of like a bug eye situation on one side.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still a good little boy.
Good.
Yeah.
Good to know what I have to look
forward
to.
I'm a big dog guy, but, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
There are all kinds of dogs and all kinds of people, Noel.
Agreed.
That's our motto around here.
That is the Movie Crush motto. That is on our tartan, our flag,
yes.
Our crest.
Our Scottish tartan.
Indeed.
So, Noel, we're going to start out this week with some social studies on...
Social studies on Movie Crush.
I watched The Ice Storm last night because Casey's coming in after this.
Good one.
In fact, by the time this comes out, that show will already be out. One of my favorite movies. And it nails a time and place almost better than any other movie I've seen, which was 70s
suburbs,
northeastern suburb, but like a wooded suburb. It's
right.
not like cul-de-sac house after house neighborhood. This sort of a rural area of Connecticut, but really just the time and place just nails it, and very evocative for me, especially having grown up in that era. So ask everyone, what is your number one movie for nailing a specific time and place that just nailed it more than any other movie? And I'll allow you to think unless you've got one with a bullet.
It's just the most recent obvious one. I thought Once Upon a Time in Hollywood absolutely destroyed it.
Yeah.
I remember Hollywood in the 60s.
Or,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just you really felt transported there. You felt like you were occupying that world.
Yes. You can imagine that he nailed it perfectly.
I would imagine been such, yes.
I totally agree. So we're going to start off with old pal Mike Ireland says, Coming to America. He said it really nails gritty 80s New York.
Wasn't it filmed in gritty 80s New York?
Yes. These aren't people who have fooled people by filming in different places.
I see. I see. Okay.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was filmed in Hollywood.
It was. It was indeed.
So I see what you mean, though.
No, what I mean is
it was set in the time when it was filmed.
Right.
Yeah. I get your point. And you do have a point.
I mean, you can still look at it as an artifact, like as, oh, this is a really good representation of this time.
Yeah, because you can also not nail your own time and place, you know.
For sure.
I get what you mean.
One I think that does a really good job of what we're talking about here is Bad Lieutenant with Harvey Keitel.
Because
like super gritty 80s New York to the point where it almost looks like 70s New York.
Right.
It's 90s even. Excuse me. It's like late 80s, early 90s New York.
Yeah.
But when you watch that movie, it feels like Taxi Driver,
it
which
does.
Is another good example.
Yeah, agreed. Boy, Bad Lieutenant. I haven't seen that in a while.
It's a good one. It's super messed up, but it's like it does a really good job of transporting you to that
totally agree.
New York world.
Well, and in fact, on Mike Ireland's comments, Culver Matthew says, "But it was made in the mid '80s in New York." And Mike said, "When does it take place then?" Ha ha. So, Mike is Mike's a good guy.
Seems that way.
He's laughing at himself. I like that. Matt Cliff says Paper Moon. Peter Bogdanovich totally nailed what I would imagine 1930s rural small town America would feel like. Great movie.
I have not seen it.
It is really good. That has long been purported to be Josh Clark's favorite movie.
Is that right?
Yes. And one day he's going to come on here and talk about it. I hope.
I hope so too.
I mean, I hope he'll talk about Paper Moon. He'll come on and talk about something.
Eventually.
Eventually. I'd like to get Josh in here on a roundtable, too. That'd be fun.
That would be.
Leanna Stone says, Goodfellas and a civil action with John Travolta. Travolta. He dropped the T. Did you know that, Noel?
Is that his new thing?
Uh-huh. John Travolta.
Yeah.
A lawyer
it's
and—
after you go clear, you got to drop a consonant.
And whoa. He went clear on his head.
Yeah. He did. Oh, gosh.
Looks great.
Well, yeah, but have you seen this new movie he's in, this Fred Durst vehicle?
Well, I haven't seen it. It was in the theater for I think they pulled it after a Friday release even.
Well, I think it's just patently offensive.
Yeah, it looks pretty bad.
Because he plays sort of a mentally challenged individual.
Right.
Is that even okay to say? I don't even know what to say anymore. But yeah, it seems like he's really leaning into that and it's not good.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. But he's bald now, which is where I was going.
He is bald.
And he looks great. He should be bald. And he should also not be a member of a cult that is abusive. Matthias Larsson, old pal, says, Let the Right One In pretty much nails the early to mid-80s of wintry Sweden. Yeah, I bet you Larsson with two S's would know. Sounds very Swedish.
I do not recall that feeling like a period piece at all. Maybe to me that just means it was effective and didn't shove it down your throat, you know?
But I have a feeling he was from Sweden in that era, so
right.
It's probably
evocative
for him. Charles Martin Akers, old pal, says, Home Alone and Christmas Vacation – Late 80s, early 90s, middle class, Midwestern style. Okay. Jeff Moore, Revolutionary Road. Wasn't alive in the 1950s, but I think that film probably gets it right, both the good and the bad. Yeah, that is true. and then Culver Matthew, he's got a bee in his bonnet because he says, people keep naming movies that were filmed in the time and place that they nailed. I don't think this is the exercise.
That was my question.
I know. So you and Culver Matthew. Well, Culver Matthew, you have your name backwards.
I love that he referred to it as an exercise, though. That's that's adds a lot of gravitas to the proceedings.
It's a bit
here.
Of an exercise.
Yeah. Thought experiment. Yeah.
The Gooch says Lady Bird, nailing early 2000s Sacramento.
100%, which I think is so funny that now early 2000s is like a historical period.
Yeah.
That just makes me feel so old, but I also kind of love it.
Yeah. For sure.
Because it did have a feel of like the late – that's the thing. Like the beginning of every new era feels like the tail end of the previous one.
Sure.
In some weird confluence. You know what I mean? Like,
I dig that. It's all arbitrary.
Yeah, oh, of course it is.
Because we just draw these lines between years as if it means anything.
Well, it takes time for us to even get what's the thing of the 2000s.
Right.
Doesn't happen on day one of 2000.
That's right. No, it doesn't. Of course not. That's when the Y2K bug makes the elevators not work.
Exactly.
And all the money in your bank account disappear.
Yeah, as long as you got like lots of, you know, bottled water, you're okay.
Daniel Quinn Booley says, mid-90s. I was born
what
in
era 1990. Do you think that, what era did that nail? I'm confused.
That's funny. No.
Sorry.
Michael McCord, Linklater's Dazed and Confused, man. Yeah. 1976.
Yeah.
And Sofia Coppola's adaptation of The Virgin Suicides. Totally. She really nailed that that 70s era. Michael Patrick's Boyhood, although that took place over quite a period of time, but I agree that he really nailed that.
I still have not caught Boyhood, Chuck. That's a hole.
It's a whole thing?
It's a hole.
Oh. That's a... Debbie Frangadakis, one of our oldest of friends, Election, exactly like suburban Omaha in the 90s, could be a time capsule. Yeah, I love it, man. Alexander Payne and his dirty cars. It's one of his things. Vanessa Lopez, oldest of friends, Lords of Dogtown, spot on for early skate culture in Southern California. Patrick Gorman, another old pal, says Boiler Room was essentially the way sales worked before the financial crisis. Interesting. I never saw that.
Sorry.
That's all right. We've got computers that make noises, Noel.
We do. That's where it's the future.
Blair Christensen says A New Hope nails the portrayal of Far, Far Away and Long Ago. That's very cute.
Yep. Just like Mad Max Fury Road really nails Trump's America.
Yeah. Sarah Stapleton, Hell or High Water. I have not seen that. I want to see that. It's supposed to be really good.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah?
Oh, it's grizzled. It's very No Country for Old Men, that vibe. It's, what's his name? Jeff Bridges.
Oh, yeah.
And who's his counterpart, buddy? I don't remember, but it's really, really good.
Bo Bridges?
No, it's that kid who's in the X-Men movies, and he was in that he was in 6 Feet Under. He played the troubled art student that Claire falls in love with.
Oh, sure, Ben Foster.
Ben Foster, he's in it, and
he's a hell of an actor.
It's so good.
Yeah, yeah, I got to see that. Love Ben Foster. Boy, is he good. He's one of the best of his generation, I think.
Have you seen The Lighthouse, Chuck?
I have. We've talked about that on this very show.
We did.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Shit. Take this out.
Did you see it yet?
Yeah.
We'll have to crush it.
We should. Maybe you had. Maybe I hadn't seen it yet. I don't remember.
You had not.
Oh. Well, then we're not taking any of this out because it wasn't a stupid question.
No. I don't think you ever repeat yourself on the show, so it should not be a problem.
I always repeat myself on the show, Chuck, and you know that.
Sarah Stapleton says Hell or High Water. She said nails the Texas panhandle, even though it was filmed in New Mexico. That's all right. Mm. You can still fake. I mean, that's the magic of movie making.
Both places have dust.
That's true. Oh, boy, you're right up my alley, Alec. Alec, man, with the vowels. Maximowicz, Inside Llewyn Davis.
Mm.
He said, it wasn't around New York in the 60s, but it sure makes me feel like I was. Yes, Joker. Mike Mead says Joker. 80s New York vibe. When is the Joker set, though?
I mean, it feels like that. It feels like a King of Comedy era New York.
Yeah,
kind
but
of.
Is it?
To me, I don't.
Or is it
I,
not
I,
supposed to
I
be?
Think,
a time
I think
and place.
That's it, right? It just sort of like they don't really, you know, make a big deal about
Did
it.
Did you finally see that?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I just I really want to.
Grant Woody, The assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford captures the look and feel of the time, I would think, pretty accurately. Grant, that is one of my faves with a friend of the show, Paul Schneider.
The Schneids?
Schneids is in that movie. Oldest of friends, Yvonne Baudet, says Taxi Driver, of course. Benjamin Johnson, Goonies and Gremlins. Nail the 80s. Somewhere Culver Matthew is just spinning out of control.
He's losing
so
his mind.
You don't get the exercise. Ryan Follinger says the 50s in Greece. I'm not sure if that nails the time and place so much as Ryan just loves Greece.
I think it's also just sort of like it's a stereotypical kind of just absolute send-up of that era.
Happy Days.
Yeah.
It's all the same. Are they nailing time and places, Noel, or are they just homaging?
I think it's absurdly homage-y, yeah.
By the way, happy anniversary, Noel.
Oh, man. Thanks, bud. What'd you get me?
3 days ago, we had our 2-year anniversary on the show.
Now you're going to respond.
I didn't get you anything. I got you... I made you co-host.
That's true. I appreciate that. That means the world.
When we started this show, it was much different. It's like, oh, I'm going to interview celebrities every Friday, and that's the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were the producer,
mm-hmm.
and editor. Even,
I right? was early on, yeah.
And then you tossed that like a bad goal.
I didn't toss it, Chuck. I was pulled elsewhere.
You were pulled in different directions.
Yeah.
But you were kind enough to join me as co-host of the Mini Crushes.
I love it, dude. I always
and
say
this.
And that's
become the biggest part of the show.
Well, I always say this is like, I always look forward to doing it because we do it early in the morning, and it's just a nice tone setter for my day. And I always find that I have a really nice day when we do these.
You always have a nice day when you start it with Chuck.
It's true.
That should be on a t-shirt.
I love that. A bumper sticker at the very least.
All right, Noel, we're going to move on because this is an exercise coming up. I wanted to see if people could write movie log lines, new ones.
I saw this one crossing my feed.
And I did not read any of these. I didn't want to spoil any of these. Did you?
I like the one that you liked because I wasn't aware of it, and I love Royal Tenenbaums, and I never – because the thing about the tagline –
Well, that's a tagline. I'm talking about the log lines.
Wait a minute. Are these two different exercises?
Yeah, a tagline is like the 15-word sentence on the movie
on the
poster. The log line is what you tell the executive in the room.
Yes, I got it. I think it's interesting, though, the idea of the tagline because it's so ephemeral because they disappear. You don't remember those anymore.
I do, but yeah,
you
sure.
do, but that's cool. I want to know them. That's why I'm fascinated by that one, but I'm jumping the gun here. Let's
that's
go with
right.
log
That'll
lines.
Be next week, everybody.
Arr!
Taglines. So I asked everyone to write a log line. A log line is a one-sentence description of your movie. It's also known as the elevator pitch. If you know what an elevator pitch is for any business, that's the very quick summation because you've just happened to be on the elevator with Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to tell him because
mm-hmm.
his floor's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
You got one sentence.
He's got places to go.
So it's interesting. I wanted people to write original log lines, but I was not clear. So they're writing log lines for existing films. That's fine. Or should I pull a Culver Matthew and pitch a fit?
No, you often aren't very clear with these posts, Chuck. That's sort of the fun of it because then we get to like bitch about it and decide whose fault it is. Who dropped the ball here?
I dropped the ball. Vanessa Lopez said for Zombieland, we're just going to go with it because this is what you want, everybody. Four new friends survive the zombie apocalypse because they never ever forget the cardinal rule, the double tap.
I don't get it.
No, I mean.
Is that the real one?
What do you mean the real one? It's the real one she wrote.
She wrote it for the movie.
These are all original creations.
Okay. Whether it's an original movie or an original log line for an existing movie?
Yes.
Is that what we're saying? We're going to get a mix of these things?
It looks like it.
Okay.
Because it seems like I was not clear enough.
Should we guess? Should we play the game?
All right,
or
sure. I'll let you guess.
Okay.
Let's make this fun for us.
Yeah.
Becca Lou, one of our oldest friends, says, a ragtag group of friends sets out on an adventure to find a lost treasure in the hopes of saving their homes, making a new friend, and a few enemies along the way.
First of all, what constitutes ragtag in a group? They're just like seat of their pants, kind of like, you know.
I think ragtag means disparate, right?
Or like they're all different? They're all like, it's like a...
Like a motley crew?
A motley,
right?
Well, see, even then, motley crew, doesn't that mean like a gang of thugs that are going to beat you up?
All right. Ragtag, untidy, disorganized, or incongruously varied in character.
Aha.
Yeah, so it is rag.
Like, okay.
Yeah, that's a good description then. Now
that's
that
very, very
movie.
Good. So ragtag, search for treasure.
Group of friends.
Save their homes.
Adventure to, search for treasure to save their homes.
Is that's this Goonies?
That's the giveaway, yes.
Yeah.
The Goonies.
I think what's the deal? The developers are going to take their homes or something like that? Or?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they need the money.
Because they live in a seaside community.
They live in a hamlet.
And that's a big deal for developers. They love that shit.
They want some big hotel or something.
Big hotels. Did you hear about the Margaritaville Hotel here in Atlanta, by the way?
I feel like I heard something.
I think it's a big kerfuffle. Like these developers are swooping in and they're going to build a Margaritaville Hotel.
Where?
I don't remember.
Why?
But it's in an area people are not happy about. And also Richard's Variety Store is getting forced out, apparently, which is a real bummer.
I don't know what that is.
What? You call yourself an Atlantean? No, it's just a cool little store that sells like fake poop and wigs and, you know, tutus and board games. And it's a variety store. They sell a variety of
Where
things.
Where is it?
It's right by Trader Joe's on Monroe, like on the outer shopping center where the movie theater's behind them.
Uh-huh.
It's a beloved spot, but the rents are forcing folks out.
Well, that's sad then. I'm sad for Richard. Maybe I should have bought some fake poop.
There's still time, Chuck. There's still time.
Caleb Selman says, man regrets life choices after being forced to join the family business.
That could be so many. Mm-hmm. But man regrets.
What's the biggest movie ever about a man being forced to join his family business?
I don't know.
The Godfather.
Oh, see, that's, you threw me there with family business.
Yeah. Luke Harkelrode, one of our oldest of pals, says, a fun space adventure movie based on a failed space adventure television show.
Was it?
That's not a great log line, but it is funny.
Failed.
That's a, I don't know if I would say failed because it's a favorite television show.
Lost in Space?
But it was canceled eventually.
Huh. Star Trek?
No. Firefly.
Firefly. Great show and movie.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone wrote an original. I'm not seeing that. I wasn't clear, Noel.
It's okay. This is fun.
All right. Paul Stevens says this, Noel. Mm-hmm. Purple man's lust for jewelry will end half of the life on Earth.
That's clever.
That's very easy.
Yeah. It almost reads like a haiku. It would be the Avengers.
That's right.
This is interesting, and you probably already know this, but I recently started watching Community, the Dan Harmon show, mm-hmm. and the first several episodes are directed by the Russo brothers, who went on to direct like all the Avengers movies and like all the big Marvel movies.
Is that where they got their start?
I think it is.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Austin R. Debsky says, a mischievous suspender-wearing young man agrees to be experimented on, resulting in the loss of his free will.
Is it the Lawnmower Man?
A Clockwork Orange.
Oh. No, the guy in Lawnmower Man didn't wear suspenders. He wore overalls. Those are not the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think I saw Lawnmower Man, like, you know, when it was out.
It's terrible. It's like one of those early, like,
didn't,
it's like VR, you know? Like,
sure.
There was a big moment for that in the 90s. It was Virtuosity.
Right. When it was all like wireframe.
The polygons, you know? Yeah. Like just shapes, you know?
Totally. Mm-hmm. Was Virtuosity Keanu Reeves or was that a
Virtuosity was you're thinking of Johnny Mnemonic maybe?
That's what I'm thinking of.
And Virtuosity was actually Russell Crowe and Denzel Washington.
Oh, okay.
It was quite a big budge picture at the time.
Big budge.
Big budge.
Louis Silva, he gets it. It's not just a boxing movie. It's the greatest love story ever told.
Hurricane? Raging Bull?
Rocky.
Ah, shit.
Raging Bull, not a love story.
That's true.
But an abusive husband.
I think you're right, yeah.
Let me see here. Some of these are a little on the nose. All right, Noel, let's do one more because I wasn't clear enough. Have I mentioned that?
Maybe a time or two, but I think it yielded a result that is consistent. So,
yeah, I wanted people to make up their own movie ideas.
Well,
maybe put it in a sentence.
That's what you should. You should have said literally that.
We'll try it next time. Dylan Thomas, screw you, Noel. Dylan Thomas says, seriously, this guy freaking loved his dog.
Oh, gosh.
You know what that
Marley
is.
Marley and Me?
No.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Freaking loved his dog. A boy and his dog? Dog bites man?
Oh, man.
Dog tooth?
This one has been a wash.
Dog. Dogville? Dog. What is it?
What recent movie?
Did Lassie? Guy
really love his dog.
He really
so
loved
much
his
so
dog.
That he would kill thousands of people for it.
Oh, John Vick.
Yes, John Vick.
Yes.
All right. I'm sorry, everyone. That's my fault.
Why are you apologizing? That
I'm
was
gonna
a
take
fun,
this one on the chin.
That was a fun segment.
I screwed the pooch, as they say. That's a really gross saying when you think about it.
It really is.
Why would anyone do that?
How is it so accepted and just like, you know?
I don't know if it still is. I think I just dug that one up.
Okay.
From the past. Screwed the pooch.
Screwed the pooch.
Poor dog.
Ugh.
Did you see that cat on Monday Night Football the other night?
Woof. No. No.
That was a kitty cat, a black cat,
uh-huh.
That just all of a sudden was on the football field during the Giants-Cowboys game. And this cat is running, scared, and all Emily and I can do is just feel bad for this cat. Like,
yeah.
People are laughing, and the commentators are having fun, and people are, you know, in the stadium are having a good time, and all I could think of is that poor cat is petrified
right
now.
I bet.
But as the cat is running, it's running toward the end zone, and I went, watch, Emily. It's like, people are going to cheer when that cat gets into the end zone. She's like, what? I was like, you watch. I bet you anything. And that cat got closer and closer, crossed the goal line, and everyone erupted as if it had scored.
Amazing.
Football fans. You can count on them, Noel.
They're nothing if not consistent.
That's right. All right, we're going to finish up with comment card. Because there's no way that I can screw that up. Screw you, Noel. Mike Ireland, oldest of friends, says, I know Halloween is past, guys, but what's the scariest movie you've ever seen? Scariest, like really scariest movie. I don't know.
I mean, I found Hereditary to be quite scary and
quite
affecting.
Yeah, that movie scared me pretty well.
Quite affecting.
I thought the original Halloween was pretty scary.
Mm-hmm. I was particularly damaged as a kid by the original Pet Sematary movie. I think I've mentioned that a time or two on the show.
But don't that had going there.
That was going to the wars. Lost.
I remember that movie scared me.
It had to do with the time I saw it. It was way above my pay grade, you know, like as my emotional pay grade. And there were some things about it that really jacked up my little child mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like Zelda, the creepy skinny sister, you know,
that
kind of crawls right toward the camera.
Yeah, any skittery movements or like crab crawls or anything, that'll get me every time.
There's a fabulous Korean movie that was horribly remade for American audiences, which it always annoys me when the original is just so great. It's like, read some subtitles, people.
Yeah.
But it's called A Tale of Two Sisters. It's a Korean ghost story that is quite scary.
Yeah.
I recommend it highly.
I like being scared in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I will say Chainsaw Massacre got under my skin pretty well. Psycho was pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that original Halloween, that really got me. You know what I watched the other night, dude, was the original Evil Dead, because I had just seen part two for the Joe Gardens episode.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen I think I'd only seen the original Evil Dead once maybe. And it was a while ago because I kind of forgot how fucking bonkers that movie is.
Yeah, it's bonkers. The thing that is interesting to me is, I want to hear your take on this. Like, it felt like the work of a filmmaker who was trying to make a scary movie.
Yeah.
And then the second one leaned into the fact that it was kind of funny.
Scary. He certainly changed the tone of the second film a little bit.
Yeah.
The first film was straight horror.
Right.
And then they got progressively fun, more
right.
fun.
Exactly. But I think there were some things about the first one that maybe accidentally read as funny, you know?
Maybe.
After the fact.
It was all pretty fucked up, though.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a long time either, but that's just, I remember making that connection. Because I did it the same way you did. Like, I think I saw Army of Darkness first, then Evil Dead 2 second, and then eventually Evil Dead.
Were you confused?
It didn't really. I don't know that it matters. The mythology is so loose and sort of doesn't really matter too much, you know.
Boy, the original was just really. I guess I'd forgotten how nutso that movie was. Like the last 20 minutes was just crazy.
Yeah.
With the practical special effects and
right the tree. I remember the tree.
Well, that's the one scene that does not age well.
Because it's
the tree rape.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, and Sam Raimi has come out and been like, I regret having that scene.
But I actually feel like they did something along the lines of that in the remake that came out a handful of years ago.
I have not seen that, but they did.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did read some articles, because I was like, I wonder if Sam Raimi feels bad about this. And he does. And then they mentioned that the new one, like, why did they even redo that scene
right.
in the new movie?
Right.
So, yeah. I don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It definitely did not. Even watching it the other night, I was like, ew, I don't like this scene.
No.
Didn't need that.
Mm-mm. Didn't serve the story, you know.
It was 1981. It was shocking.
Yeah, I bet.
Sarah Nagy says this, favorite holiday foods.
What?
Favorite holiday foods, Noel.
That's a movie-related question.
No, they don't have to be movie-related.
Oh, okay, you're right.
I told them they could ask anything they wanted.
Oh, this is an AMA situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Holiday foods.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got any special family things you always do? Like, you know, when we used to go to Ohio for Emily's thing, they always did Skyline Chili and Buckeye Balls.
What?
And that's the only time that we had that stuff was on the holidays.
Oh, Buckeye Balls.
Buckeye Balls.
Not Buck Eyeballs.
Buckeye Balls. It's a...
Testicles.
It's an Ohio
Rocky
thing.
Mountain oysters or whatever.
Rocky Mountain oysters or testicles.
Wait, these are eyeballs you're talking about.
No. Buckeye Balls. It's a little sweet peanut butter and chocolate thing.
Oh,
made in Ohio, the Buckeye State.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Chuck. I thought you were talking about like crazy traditions. I assumed it had to be something.
Not crazy at all, just a little sweet treat.
I love that.
They make every year.
That sounds good. My mom does a really nice leg of lamb situation.
You mean like testicles?
Yeah, just like that.
Lamb testicles?
They're stuffed with lamb testicles and eyeballs.
Leg of lamb, huh?
Leg of lamb. It's just it's something I don't eat except on holidays with my mom. And so it's a very,
gotcha.
It's very nostalgic. I like it.
Yeah, we don't have any our standard Thanksgiving, I make the stuffing and the mashed potatoes and we do sort of all the standard Southern trimmings.
Mm-hmm.
But Thanksgiving is different all over the country.
I've been
up north and had Thanksgiving and they had like oysters in their stuffing.
Oh, I've had oyster dressing. It's great.
Well, here we call it dressing. There it's stuffing.
Right. But my mom makes it. She'll make a couple of different types, and she'll do an oyster one.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, it's super good.
I wasn't wild about it, but I don't like cooked oysters.
Got it.
Is weird. Like, I can eat 3 dozen raw oysters.
So good.
But I don't like a cooked – like I don't like a Rockefeller or a fried oyster.
Is that the one with the breadcrumbs and the spinach
little
and cheese and
yeah.
Parmesan?
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. baked.
I prefer them raw as well.
Yeah.
I like them cooked. You don't like an oyster po' boy?
No.
No?
No, I don't like – I really especially don't like the fried oyster, which is weird because I like fried food more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the texture. I like that snotty raw.
Ooh, that snotty raw.
So good. Slipping down my throat.
Ooh. Mm. You really paint a picture, Chuck.
Thank you. Let me see here. Christine – Heinrichsen Garraway, what movie best describes your family of origin? Does that mean like your ancestry or
your people?
Just, life for young Noel with mom and dad.
In true movie crush fashion, I think we should go both ways.
Okay. Do you have an answer?
The movie that described I don't really have much heritage, as it were. I'm pretty
sure you do.
Vanilla, I think I'm Scandinavian. I did one of those 23andMe tests, and it was very unremarkable.
Really?
Yeah. It was largely Nordic, stock.
That's exciting.
Okay.
Look at you. You look like a little miniature Viking.
A little Leif.
Sure.
Leif Erikson.
Sure.
With a K.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's tough. I wouldn't have an answer for that version of the question. For family, I just have distinct memories of going to movies with my mom when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like going to see Jurassic Park with my mom.
So that describes your family?
Kind
Jurassic
of.
Park?
I don't know. We didn't watch movies as a family, really. It's just a memory I have of being young.
I gotcha. I think what she's after is a movie that reminds you of your family. Not like, I saw this with my family, but The Royal Tannenbaums was my family because I was in I had a bunch of child geniuses.
Really?
As siblings.
Yeah. I don't know. Like maybe that would be pretty good. There was a lot of like consternation in my family. A lot of drama and big personalities.
Oh, okay.
So not as clever or as symmetrically framed as Royal Tenenbaums, definitely.
I don't have an answer.
So your answer wasn't Royal Tenenbaums?
No.
You didn't have child geniuses?
No.
I feel betrayed.
My brother was pretty smart.
Right on.
My sister and I are just average in all the best ways.
Agreed.
Megan Carroll, what villain or monster do you have the most sympathy for? That's a good one. I think I always like that alien. I really feel bad for him.
Love that alien. Which one? E.T.? He wasn't a monster.
Alien.
The alien. The xenomorph.
Is that what it's called?
It's a xenomorph, yeah.
I don't even know this stuff.
Yeah. I sure like that alien.
A lot of sympathy for that alien.
Would you consider E.T. to be a movie monster?
Not a monster.
Well, he was a kind of a monster.
Didn't monster indicate bad and scary?
I don't know. Frankenstein's monster wasn't bad and scary. He was a sweet, sweet boy at heart.
Maybe.
He was like sniffing flowers and stuff. He was misunderstood.
Well, in one scene.
Well, that's a famous scene, Chuck.
Yeah, but he also smashed his head.
Does he? Does he really smash heads?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It depends on what Frankenstein you're talking
that's
about.
That's true.
Boy, remember that Robert De Niro Frankenstein?
Was it not good? I heard it was not good.
It was a bit of a stinker.
I
think that was like a college movie, and I went and saw it. I was all excited.
That was a real stretch for him, Like, he was really, like, trying to lean into something new.
You think?
For his career. Like, that, like, you know, to agree to do that role.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in his mind, it's like the Boris Karloff, you know, Frankenstein is iconic, and he wanted to, like, be a part of that canon or whatever. Yeah. Maybe it was a big deal movie to him when he was a kid, but odd choice.
Odd choice.
Yeah.
Kevin Herbon, old friend, says, the studio gives you a ton of money to make Jaws 5. What's your plot? Well, Kevin, I think if I was going to make Jaws 5, the only thing to do would be to go back to the beginning, set it at Amity Island, bring in Richard Dreyfuss. Sadly, Roy Scheider and Robert Shaw are gone. But you got to bring Richard Dreyfuss back. And maybe if we're just going to really go out there and make up a brand new movie that doesn't have to be believable, maybe some of the blown up shark from Jaws 1 has morphed into a brand new giant shark.
Maybe like a piece of blown up shark meat lands in a pool of ecto ooze, sure. Like Ninja Turtle ooze.
Yep.
And then it turns into Mega Shark.
Yeah.
Mega Jaws.
And then Richard Dreyfuss is the only person. Mr. Holland.
Yes.
Has to come back.
He has to lure the shark into docileness with his opus.
That's right.
My only request for Jaws 5 would be that it's in 5D.
5D.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about
two
that
better than
yet.
3D. Two more D's.
All right, you know, Noel, I think we should kind of wrap this one up, spank it on the bottom, and get it up on out of here. I will say, though, Vanessa Lopez's question from a couple of weeks ago about going on a double date with a celebrity couple, I told Emily about that question, and she said the same thing I did. So that means we are simpatico with Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick. With a bullet for both of us.
SJP. Whatever happened to her?
What do you mean? She's around?
She's around, but she doesn't really act so much anymore.
Sure she does.
She did that Sex and the City movie.
She's done more than that. She's great.
I know she's great, but
she didn't go anywhere, Noel. What? She's all over the place.
Is she? Are you certain? What are her latest credits, Chuck?
I'm looking now because I made such a statement that she hasn't gone anywhere. I told you she's going to be in that play in New York that we're going to see next year.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, well, she had the TV series for 3 years, Divorce.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember that.
And she was on Glee.
Mm-hmm.
Three episodes of Glee.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Movie-wise, I think Sex and the City 2 was one of the last things she did. Although she was in a movie last year called Here and Now.
Mm. Which don't recall that one.
Don't know, but she was the lead.
Okay.
So
I like her, too.
You know what she says?
What?
Screw you, Noel.
Uh-huh. Is that going to be the subtitle of this episode?
It probably should be.
I like it.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for sticking it out through this one. And we'll see you next week.
Mm-hmm. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.